you cannot fit your own interest in the organization. You know, the organization is made of people and the people have interest. And I think that this is the future of the organization. You have to align the different people's interest in order for the company to grow.
Can you imagine working at an organization where there is no overall CEO, where there are no real managers within teams? An organization that has a flat hierarchy and is completely open and transparent on everything, all topics, from profits to sales and everything else. And to top it all off, can you imagine that somebody else, not a predefined process or a ladder or a structure, defines how much you earn? Your colleagues decide how much you earn every month, every year. Sounds nuts, right? Well, maybe. To many organizations and the way we structure our businesses today, it does sound crazy, to say the least. However, there are more and more organizations that believe in this type of way of working. Maybe not all of the aspects, but some of them for sure, especially the flat hierarchies and the self-management within teams, within organizations. And today I have the absolute joy and pleasure of talking with Giselle De Cusi and Jorge Silva from a company called Ten Pines, which is a customer software development company based in Argentina with 10 years in the business. And they help clients build software solutions through an agile approach with a passion and talent. But what makes them special is all the things that I've just mentioned. They are a horizontal organization with a unique culture based on respect, transparency, and trust. They believe in doing things differently. And they are also a certified B Corp. Gisela and Jorge share what this means in practice. How does this work in real life? And they tell us about how they've set this all up, how they put it in motion, why they've done it. So they give us insight and history, as well as did this fair during the 2020 COVID pandemic. What did that mean for the business, and also what challenges they've experienced? And they also give us an insight to what's up ahead for them as an organization in the months and years to come. Here's my conversation with Gisela De Cusi and Jorge Silva. Enjoy. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, together, we got this. Let's begin with one of my favorite questions, one that I always ask. And that is, when you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up? And I'll leave it entirely up to you. Who would like to go first?
When I was a kid, I was to be a paleontologist, the science of looking for dinosaurs. I was really fan of dinosaurs, and it was the time of Indiana Jones, so I wanted to be like Indiana Jones, archaeologist, and all the stuff.
And what happened that you ended up programming?
Well, I really liked math and computers at that time too. And what I was thinking was that since to be a paleontologist, it was really expensive, because I have to go to a university outside my city, and I have to travel a lot and all that stuff, I decided to be like aficionado and paleontologist and study computer science.
That's cool. Gisela, how about you?
I don't recall a lot when I was a child. I believe that I was always in a professional crisis until I found programming. The older I can recall, it was something because my grandma had a dog, and my parents didn't allow me to have a dog because my father was too allergic to everything. Basically, I wanted to be like a vet or something about biology, something like that. And that's the older stuff I recall. And then I ended up studying IT. I really liked programming. Yeah, it's like a
white. There's a gap. I have to say, I've had quite a few people who wanted to be vets on as guests. I can safely say on here that I've got the first paleontologists on this podcast. That's for sure. Never, no one ever wanted to be that. And as you were saying, the first person that came to my mind as a famous paleontologist, not a real one, the same as Indiana Jones, as you mentioned, that's the second person that came to my mind. The first one was Ross from Friends, probably one of the most famous paleontologists that I can remember. I'm kind of more and more aware that Friends, a show that was created in the 1990s, is more and more becoming a show of a certain age group. More and more people, younger people that I come across, they're not necessarily, quite a few have heard of them, obviously your Friends, because it's such a big show, but fewer and fewer get the references. I wonder how much of a timeless show that show will become, but I guess time will tell. The reason we're here, and this is something that we started talking about before we pressed the record button, is why I even reached out to you, first of all, which we're recording this show in June 2022. What prompted me to reach out to you was the BBC article about your organization, which I came across in May of 2021, about salaries and how you do kind of set salaries for people, for your colleagues at Ten Pines. And that's kind of pulling at that string, I found out more about the organization, something, a topic that I'm more and more passionate and interested in, which is kind of self-management, broadly understood as Thiel principles, which I think I would really love to find out a little bit more, for you to share a little bit more what that means for you, what is the organization about, how it's set up. And rather than me trying to explain it, I think it's best coming from the source. Jorge, I'll direct this one at you as one of the co-founders. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of the ways of working and how the business and how the Thiel principles work at Ten Pines?
Well, maybe I can tell you a little bit about how we started the company in terms of the mindset. The main idea was the founders were working in different organizations, and at that moment we were really committed to the Agile community. The Agile community was starting. That was 2008, 2009. And we were really committed with that, and we really believe in the Agile mindset. And we identified like a gap between the project itself, the operational side of the business, and the management. So we can work in a project in an agile way, but when you go to the management, there is like a gap, and the management is working in a traditional way. So this is a conflict between the management and the developers and the project.
Can I expand a little bit more there? Because you're talking about agile principles and everything. That's a lot of software related terminology. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, like I said, I believe that it has like a bad marketing, but for what you are referring to, it's like the heart of agile, you know, like the values, like the honesty, courage, truth, self-empowering people, like all of that, not meaning that we join together in a room, talk for 10 minutes while we are stand up and then we leave the room. Like we are talking more about that, like trust, transparency, those kind of values.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw this gap, and we tried to bridge that gap, of course, in terms of the values that the Agile mindset has, and bring those values to the management too. So we end up with a lot of practices and ideas from the Agile world implemented in the management. And at that time, we have like a really struggle trying to implement those ideas. And we came across with a book called Maverick from Ricardo Semler. And in that book, we saw a lot of the ideas that we had into practice. So we took a lot of those ideas, we remixed those ideas, and we merged with some agile practices in order to have these main values: transparency, collaboration, self-management. So that's basically how we end up with this kind of organization. I used to explain how we work briefly using a metaphor. My idea is like, you know, we have a table with three legs, and in the top of the table, we have like collaborative decision making. For that, we use consent. And in order for that to work, I can explain what is everything right, but I don't want to be too long. For that to work, we need information. So we have an open book management and the policy of full transparency. All the numbers, salaries, etc., it is open for everyone in order to make good decisions. And this is the first leg. The second leg will be training and explain all that information, because you can open the information, but if you don't understand the information, it's pointless. So the second leg will be like training and explain the information. So we have particular trainings and talks and explanation or differentiations in order to explain the numbers and how this works. And the third one will be a bold profit sharing policy, where 50% of the earnings of the organization every year is shared among all the employees, not in an equal way, but in a fair way. We try to split the money in a fair way. So in order for everyone to work, we need these three legs. And if you cut one of the legs, the table is going to move and not to be stable, and the decision making process is not going to work. That's why I think that this is like a table that you need all the three legs in order to be stable. This is briefly how it works.
Or maybe we can give more examples, because for instance, mm-hmm. maybe open book number sounds very good. I love it. But what does it mean? Like, I start with that because it shocks a lot of people. This means that there is no hidden information. Everything is public. Everything. And when I say everything, it's like the title of the article you read, like every salary is open. Everyone knows about how much do you have as a salary at the end of the month for everyone on the company. Everyone knows which is our rate, which is the incomes, the outcomes. We know everything. Basically, that will mean open numbers. Something I like to stress about this, something that I like from open numbers, is that help you to be coherent, you know, because they are open. So if you do something tricky, it's open and it's there and you're going to be ashamed for it. So that helps you a lot to like the peer pressure, you know, to be coherent with what you have at your organization. And that's very important, at least for me. The salaries are open, so incomes, outcomes, yeah. Basically, similar to that profit sharing, what Jorge was saying, we share the 50% of the net profit of the year, which is a lot. I believe that also is important, because you have been here the whole year making decisions to run the business, then you need to have the sharings for that.
What is the setup in terms of the teams and the structure? Because you've mentioned agile, obviously agile teams work in certain ways, but that can and often is only for the IT or the engineering departments. I wonder what the structure of teams, whether you do have a hierarchy or whether you don't have a hierarchy in the business as a whole. What is the setup there?
Basically, we organize ourselves with a group of interests. So every group is open and you can ask to be joined on them. We have stable groups. We have some groups that only act for a time. And then we have something that is more temporal, that depends on the interest of the people. And in order to run the business, there are some groups would need to be always stable, so like the sales team, like the recruiting team. There are many of them. We don't have a hierarchy. That's something that people struggle to understand, but that doesn't mean that we don't have an order. So it's not that when you don't have someone telling you this person is your boss, you are going to be organized for that person. No, it's not that how it works. We like to talk about the difference for us between a leader and like the opposite for that, like your boss. And understanding, and you cannot see me, but I am doing like quotes when I say boss, because usually we say that we see that boss as the person without the knowledge, without the proficiency to be at that position. Maybe sometimes more like acting as a child without giving you explanations and telling you need to do this because I say so, and then you cannot ask about that. So that's why I refer when I say leaders as opposite of bosses. So in every team we have, in every group we have, we will have what we say is, are the sponsors, are the owners of the teams, also the people who are collaborating with the teams. And also you will have maybe in some groups, people acting as observers of it. And basically the owners of the teams are, you can say, are those leaders that are those setting up the direction of the team. And we want to have at least two in every group because we like redundancy. Also, we try to move that role among other peoples because it's something that eventually it will rotate with other peoples and it will change the time you have. For instance, maybe I am too busy working at my project and I cannot act as an owner in a certain group, but I can be like a helper there. So I can take tasks and I can perform. If I am in the sales team, maybe I can go to a business meeting and introduce the company. Maybe I can prepare like a business proposal for that client. But I don't have the time to start thinking broadly, like, which is going to be our price strategy from here 2 years now? Which are going to be our key points and everything? That's something like is responsibility of the owner. And you have the sponsors of the team because they are like the older people in the organization. They have the context and the role for them is to be sure that we have owners in the team. And if we don't have owners, the idea of the sponsor is to act to stress the situation, find a new owner. And if we don't have owners, maybe it's time to close that group for this time or for whatever. But basically, you will have something that since you have specific points which are mandatory for our business, all of them, they never run off of people. It's something that have never happened with us.
Okay. Thank you very much for kind of that over, because as you were talking, I was looking at the original article that made me reach out to you on the BBC website, which I'll share in the show notes for this. And I'm looking at this graphic of the routes, the general circle, the apprentices and the kind of groups in there, which I'm guessing that's what encapsulates everything that you've just said. I'm curious because I know about this concept. I'm fascinated by it and I see it being the potential of how work should be set up in the future. Not maybe exactly like this, but at least a lot of these traits. But I've also got my other brain of the person that used to be an employee in an organization, but also now a consultant working with organizations that are kind of more rooted and do things more traditionally. And if I was a manager, if I was a senior executive, I would have alarm bells ringing straight away in terms of what you mean there's no control, that what you mean that people can pick their own things that they want to get involved and they don't get control. That command and control element is missing for me here. And Jorge, if I can direct that at you, because you are the senior person in the organization, how does that work from your point of view in terms of how do you, on an individual as a senior manager and co-founder, how do you see that work? How do you manage that within yourself to find letting go of that control and allowing that independence and autonomy for people to have all of that?
First of all, she says also a senior manager. I don't know if she's, we don't tend to say managers, but yeah, she says it's like me. So we both have an opinion and a lot of experience. From my perspective, what I try to do is not to have the control, but we say to be in control, to have the situation controlled. And like Gisa was saying, not having a structure doesn't mean that there is chaos, you know? We have a structure, but it's not a hierarchical structure with people in the structure, right? It's like, I don't know, for example, we have this circle that we call the roots, that is like in a hierarchical position is above the other circles. It's like in sociocracy, you know, that you have a structure in terms of the circles or working groups. So you have like a more general circle, and then you have a specific circles, and this is the hierarchy. It is not in terms of people, but in terms of group of works. So for me, it's that idea. And also for me, something interesting related to managers and leaders and all the stuff. Lately, I don't like too much the term leader because people tend to think when we talk about leaders, they tend to think that there is a structure, you know, leader is the new the new word for boss, you know? Yesterday you have the boss, but now you have a leader, but it's the same. It's kind of the leader is telling you what to do, right? So I was looking to another word and talking with Tobias Meyer. I don't know, maybe you know about him. I really like an analogy that is around the citizenship and citizens. So I like more that idea that everyone is a citizen and we have different traits or responsibility as a citizen. And sometimes the citizen in the organization is going to lead something or is going to propose something and another one is going to follow that. But it's not that you have a fixed role of leader or a fixed title, you know? And a citizen has to take care of the city, of the organization, and has to build trust, and it has to be transparent and collaborate with the other and to be involved in a community and to think about sustainability of the city, of the organization. So I really like that analogy in order to think how we work and how the managers or the leaders work at the time.
I wanted to add something. You were asking what I am asking for you when you were working a hierarchical world in terms I was talking about. I am asking a lot. I am asking to change your paradigm. You are more in a, we are used to work in a control paradigm. I want you to shift to trust-based paradigm. Basically, I say that because I feel that even though in the hierarchical world, where I am supposed to have the control, at least I believe that you cannot miss something that you have never had. Because if I was in that position, because a CEO came here and say, she's Ella, she has been working here for 15 years and now she's going to be your boss. That doesn't mean that the people will be happy working with you. So you're in a position where the people is expecting for you to tell you what they have to do. I don't want to do that. I want that they do whatever they want to do, and I want to help them to be there. I never been in that control position, even though if I have it in a hierarchical way, even though I am your boss, because someone says I am your boss, I will sit down, talk to you, see what do you like to do, and try to set up you for success, helping you to find which is the stuff which you like to do, you want to do, and help you to build the knowledge to be proficiency in that. And when I say trust, it's not because people usually believe that you have like all in or nothing. Like, I trust blindly, whatever you say, I will believe it, or I don't, and then I don't do anything. You have like a lot of scales of that. I can trust you can do something, then I can trust that with blindness trust, which is very hard to achieve. You have a lot of scales, and if you want to do something, it's my job to go with you, help you.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been working in this way? If I remember right, you mentioned something around 2007, 2008. I might be making things up, but is that how long you've been doing this, or when did you start working this way? Has it been that way?
Yeah, well, we were born that way, 2009. Yeah.
2009. So has this been really kind of tested through, the amount of growth that you've experienced, kind of ups and downs of the business? I'm leading into what's been going on in 2020, but I'll get to that. But before 2020, did you have any real stress tests, let's put it this way, to this way of working in the organization?
The growth that we have was like organical. So we always look for an organical growth. We didn't have, a profit target or a revenue target or whatever. We didn't have a headcount target. We say that we can grow as long as we take care of the culture. So this was our only concern, right? To take care of the culture. And if we take care of the culture, we can grow, we can move forward, have more people, get new businesses. But in that terms, that's the way for us to grow. In that path, of course, we have a lot of different situations, and it is not like the the silver bullet, you know. We were redefining how to work. So for example, at the beginning we were four, and it's not the same to have four people than to have, I don't know, 10 people. And then we went 20 people, and we start to redefine how to work, how to make decisions, how to share information. And then we have like a really different situation when we get 50 people. So when we get 50 people, we have to think how to make decisions, how to, we have like a monthly meeting when we make decisions and make proposals and discuss. And when we get 50, we have some people that was remote. We have some people that didn't fit in the same room, people that wanted to talk at the same time. So we have to organize all these things and look for new ways and keep our values, right? Transparency, collaboration, everyone's to talk. So I think for us, the main challenges was to grow and keep our values all along the way.
Yeah, since I'm a little bit more of context, we are an Argentinian-based company, so we are in a crisis like every 5 years in the context of the country. It's not we haven't have at least challenging situations, even though COVID, we can talk a little bit more about that. But yeah, today we are 82. Like, it's completely different. Imagine, like, the first day, there were only four people. You don't need to have groups. You have only four people to run everything. Now that you have 82, then you need to organize more.
Yeah, and that's exactly why the reason I was asking, because there is something called the cultural chasm that organizations, especially startups, experience. And that cultural chasm happens for one of two reasons. It's usually to do with the growth in terms of number of people working in the organization, going from 5 to 100. Obviously, when you're smaller, it's easier to maintain structures and culture and being close to one another. Or alternatively, a cultural chasm happens anywhere between 2 and 4 years into the organization's existence. Obviously, these are kind of more theoretical numbers, but the principle still stands. And I was curious, what did that look like for you when you were 4 or 5 people on board? And when now you're 85, and what happened in those changes? That's what I kind of meant by that stress test. But again, that's something that we can get into in a little while. But I'm really curious, as I said, COVID, and you already mentioned this, is 2020 and COVID situation has been a big test for most organizations in the world. I'm curious, how did your way of working, which I assume, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you are aware at that time, office-based to a certain extent, or was it more of a hybrid, or was it fully remote already? Or did you have to move to remote working as a result of the pandemic?
No, before the pandemic, we had like a policy where it's up to you if you want to go to the office 1 time, 2 times, 3 times, whatever. The only rule was to you have to tell your team and organize yourself and your time with the customer. And if this is not a problem, you can go to the office whenever you want. And that's basically the policy that we had. And what happened at that time was like around, I don't know, 1 or 2 times a week that people didn't go to the office. 1 or 2 times a week. Now we have the opposite. It's like 1 or 2 times a week the people goes to the office. So for us, we didn't have to change too much for the pandemic in that terms, because we keep the same policy. But now the people is changing the frequency, you know.
Maybe a summary is that before the pandemic we are remote friendly. Now we are remote first.
Yeah.
An interesting solution. Okay, so we've got that established. It's location and kind of ways of working is one thing, but in such a high stress situation, high uncertainty in the world, was the way of working where you've got such, let's say, looser structures compared to normal organizations, where you've got such values as openness, transparency, and so on and so forth. Was this way of working helpful, or more of a hindrance for the organization? Maybe let's look at it from both sides, for the organizations, but also from an individual's point of view. And I'll let you decide which one you want to tackle first.
I don't know, because I don't have the experience surfing the pandemic in another kind of company. I can tell you what happened with us. It's challenging, and it has been challenging, and probably it will be challenging for the current situation of the world. I believe that those are the moments where we need to be more tied to our values and our principles. We are, we were, and we are monitoring a lot the finances, the economic situation in particular, sharing the information, checking how we are feeling. At the beginning, I believe that we were more stressed as we should, and then at the long term, that generated some personal problems. Like we were too stressed, we have a lot of anxiety and a lot of many stuff, and we started to roll out some policies from different teams. Like I was saying before, for instance, we added what we say like a wellness days that you can take, like extra time off. Especially here in Argentina, you have mandatory vacations that you can take every year. And we also added more days that you can take them off for avoiding the stress of the situations. We also created a new group that they were organizing some games and some activities to be in touch with other people. Like we realized that from our model, we rely a lot on the presentiality. You know, you are in the same spot, then you talk with other people that maybe is not working with you. And then in those conversations, you share more, and then you switch contacts, and you are more aware of the situation of the general company with the remote first approach. That is not happening unless you invest on that happening. So we need to start creating those spaces to connect with each other and to have maybe some lunch all together, some meetings, some activities, like to play around, talk about life and everything, and also to disconnect. But at least I feel that for us, it's been something that helped us to talk about this open in the wild. But also we have some problems, like especially on IT. There is a lot of new stuff happening, and a lot happening on the market. I believe that we are almost like in our highest level of rotations, which is lower than the metrics of the market. But for us, it's like a lot, and we need to see how we can handle all of them. We have a lot of people who, even though they move away, like they live in the city and they decided to move other provinces in our country, like a lot of personal stuff happening, sharing, creating, and enabling new ways for the company to share that time with the person. I believe that was something that helped us. I don't know, how do you see that, Jorge?
I think it's more a challenge for us in terms of people than in the business. IT in particular is an industry that is growing, at least for now. And for us, that wasn't a problem. You know, this kind of culture and a structure allows us not to have a salesperson. We don't have salesperson. We all the leads that we have is from mouth to mouth selling and recommendations and people that have been working with us in previous companies, and they are new companies and they recommend us and they start to work with us. So in that terms, in the pandemic, was the same or even better. But the challenge for us was to keep peace of mind of the people, to the people to be safe, to feel safe, to feel connected to the organization, because the physical space for us, we realized that it was really important. Our culture rely on the physical space. This is like, at least for me, was like an aha moment. In the pandemic, I didn't realize that before. You know, it was like something implicit. You go to the office, and in the office, magical things happens, and it's the way it is. But when you continue working but not going to the office, it was like missing something, and we understood the power of the physical interaction, you know. For example, the other day I was in a meeting with a girl, and I was talking with her for like a year, you know, and we were discussing things. Or not, she was in another country, but 2 weeks ago she told me that she was pregnant, you know, and I didn't realize that she was pregnant all the time that we were talking, because I just see her from here to the top, you know. And I understood at that moment that, yeah, the it is not the same interaction, you know. It's, you're missing something. So it's really impressive, and it was really for me a shock to understand that and try to complete that part. It wasn't easy, and I think it's a challenge today. And actually, we are rethinking our office spaces. We are thinking in a more social space than in a workspace, and we have to think what to do with the people that is outside the city. So it's a challenge today. I think nobody solved it in the world, because it's something that is happening right now. But yeah, we are thinking in that way, right?
Absolutely. No, you made me laugh with the fact that you didn't realize that the person you've been talking to is pregnant. But I often laugh, and I actually was talking to some friends a couple of days ago, where it's possible that to forget the whether or not know whether people even have legs, if you think about it. Because again, you don't, you can see mine just about. I'm standing, so I'm just showing you. Obviously, you can see it on video. Gisella, I can see she has legs because she's moving around. She's clearly got a standing desk. But as silly as it sounds, it's easy to forget, because we see people from kind of the belly button upwards. Some might even be above the belly button. But it is funny, and it is in a way music to my ears what you're saying about how much focus you did put on people, making sure that people are in the right space and frame of mind, that they feel safe, and it is about that physical space. That's something that is very important to me. That's something that I often work with, and is the focus of my work with my clients. But there's still obviously a lot of organizations that did not get it, right? They were so business focused, and in a way I kind of get that, because obviously if there's no business, there's no salaries, there's no people, right? So these things are connected. I often talk on about how sales and money being sales driven is not necessarily a bad thing, because without the sales, without the money coming into the business, there's no business, as I said. It's just what priority we put on the sales figures, what, how important that is for us. But with that said, I am curious about how did the pandemic impact your business from the business point of view, kind of sales coming in, being able to deliver on what you've agreed with the clients internally. Again, similar question. Did the way of working that you've got at 10 Pints, did it help during the pandemic in terms of the business point of view? Or did you not notice any difference because it was kind of as you would normally work? You didn't simply notice anything?
I believe we have some shifts, especially with some clients. There were some contracts we were having with some historical clients that we need to finish them, and then we need to open new accounts. But luckily for us, usually, hopefully, this remains like this. We usually struggle with staffing and creating a team for a client, and it's not that we are lacking of clients. We, as Jorge mentioned, we mainly work as a recommendation. People who worked with us in the past, there were a lot of movements in everywhere, in all the places, you know, and maybe we were working with someone in one company, they shift to another company. They are looking for more engineers, and they recommend us, they reach to us, and we try to create a team. We have a way to create those kind of teams, for instance, and to make them to work. We want staff, unless it's something that is temporary, only one person for one account, working alone. We don't do that. We try to create teams. We try to create teams with balanced seniority, like you have something with more experience, with less, maybe someone which is almost a trainee, and they all act together, they work together, they support each other. That's how they empower also themselves. I believe that at least for us, it was this COVID time was more about switching clients, creating new relationships, even though being remote all the time, with not having the chance to even though travel and to meet the people, you know, and that was different because we were used to do that. That was the challenge more. And then what I mentioned before, like the IT business is growing. Many people switch shops, even though at Tenpines we have a lot of rotation. Well, I believe that we were able to handle all those situations. In the end, something that at least our clients always recognize for us, and that's why they want to work with us again, that we keep providing and delivering value with all the support we build for our teams.
Maybe another challenge that what Gisela was saying, the turnover for us. We were used to have like a low turnover, 4 or 5 times lower than the average in our industry. And I think that this was because of the culture, right? And right now we keep with 5 or 4 times lower than the industry. But the industry grow, you know, the turnover of the industry grow up. So right now we are like, I don't know, 8 to 10% of turnover. If you talk about with another industry or with another company, they are going to say that you have a really low turnover. But for us, it's like the double. So it's too much for us. And this was like, this creates a lot of questions and a lot of reflections for us, because we wanted to understand why the people was leaving now. And we realized that it was something that it was beyond us. We couldn't do too much because we have people that is going to another country, to live to another countries, because they realized that they want to know the world, to have another plans, to do another thing. We cannot deal with that. But we also realized that we can do some things. So for example, we are thinking, actually we are doing it, open a new business in Europe, in Spain, for example. So we saw an opportunity there. This is a work in progress project, you know, but I think that something interesting in Tenpines is that we try to align the personal interest with the growing of the company, you know. So we have these people that say, okay, I'm going to quit because I'm going to Spain and I want to work from Spain. And we say, okay, hold on. Do you want to open a new branch in Europe? Do you think that this is possible? What do you need? He say, yeah, I would like to, because I really like to work with Tenpines. Tenpines is not Europe. So, okay, we can try. We can find a customer. We can find a new client. And we find a way. And now we are trying to do that, you know. And this is always the same. We try to find what is the interest of the people and try to align the growth of the organization to that and find a common path, you know? And I think that this is the future of the organization. You have to align the different people's interests in order for the company to grow. You cannot fit your own interest in the organization, you know? The organization is made of people, and the people have interest, and you have to align all this interest. And when there is no more alignment, the people is going to leave, and that's okay. For us, I think this was a challenge to understand how we can align in pandemia, because it's something really new for us.
Amazing, absolutely amazing what you just said about that, kind of that creating that alignment, the fact that you use this as an opportunity to not only keep people within the organization, but also as an opportunity to expand the business into other continents, other parts of the world. I'd love to offer myself here that whenever you are up and running in Europe, in Spain, I'd love to visit you and conduct a similar interview, whether it's with you two or other people who are running the show from Spain, to invite them onto the show and have that conversation in person. I'd absolutely love to do that. So please keep me on your mailing list whenever you open your offices to give me a shout. Listen, we could be talking about this forever and a day, really, because I love this topic. Your case is fascinating to me, and I'm pretty certain it will be to other people. I'd love to leave some things on the table that we can come back to in the future. But I'd also like to ask for your advice. So if there is an organization out there that is interested and curious about this topic and is considering adopting some of these principles and the way of working that you have, what advice would you give them? And I'll ask you both individually. So Gisella, if I can direct this question to you, first of all, what advice would you give to a person who wants to adopt similar ways of working? It can be anything. I'll leave it entirely up to you.
Yeah, basically, I will encourage them to try it. It's not that there is one way to make this work. There are a lot of resources there that you can read. We have our ways, but then you have a lot of places where you can learn and see patterns. And also, it's not that you do everything or nothing, you know? Like the same I was saying about trust, it's not that you have full or nothing. You can start with tiny stuff and then you can propagate them. There are different ways of doing this, to be there, to be open-minded, and also to start like doing this small exercise, like what if I switch my paradigm and start thinking about the trust? Like if what happened if I expect the best from this person? Should I need that control? Maybe like what happened if I expect the best from you can say like someone working at the company? What happened if I ask him, what about the time you have been working on today instead of controlling that you are working from this time to this time? What happened if I start doing that kind of stuff? And with that tiny shifts, then you can generate something more.
Okay, so tiny shifts in paradigms, mindsets, trying, experimenting with certain things and seeing how it works. Fantastic advantage. Jorge, you've had time to think about this. Maybe Gisella has stolen your answer. I don't know. So it might be easier or more difficult for you. But this exact same question, I'll make it a little bit more precise. What does your gut feeling tell you? When I asked that question, what was your gut feeling's first reaction as a specific advice or a point, a place to start maybe?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of two ideas. The first is, as Gisella said, that to look for a small, you know, baby steps, like in the Agile world. I really like a quote that I always use this quote when they ask me about that. That is, many small people in small places doing small things can change the world. So I really like that idea because a lot of this idea may sound like overwhelming for you because you say, okay, yeah, this is really, really nice, pretty, but I can do this. I cannot open the numbers in my organization. I cannot know what are the salaries for everyone, but it's not necessary to go that far at the beginning. You have to start thinking small and try to implement in slow steps in order from one moment to have a big impact in the organization and in the world. So start with the small things. Study, read a lot of things, but start experimenting small things, and eventually you are going to be in a really big shift and doing a really big impact. And the second thing I was thinking, you know, I really like Michael Jackson, and there is a song called "Man in the Mirror." So I will say that start with the man in the mirror. You know, start with you, because a lot of people start complaining about, well, in my organization, doesn't work this, doesn't work that, I need that, I need this. So start with you, with your team, and start trying in a small space and move from the request and the complaint and move to the proposals, you know, start making proposals instead of complaint. So we have a saying in Spanish that is really interesting. Coming from in Spanish is de la protesta a la propuesta. That's mean from the complaint to the proposal. So because it is a word, the word sounds similar. So I will say that try to think in proposals and start with the man in the mirror. So
amazing pieces of advice from both of you. And as soon as we're done with this, I'm putting on Man in a Mirror by Michael Jackson, because it used to be one of my favorite songs. I've used to listen to it a lot. And I can't recall the last time I listened to it. So as soon as we're done here, that's the first song that's going on out of my Spotify account. That's for sure. I would love to know, if you don't mind sharing, what's coming up for you in the next few months, for the rest of the year, whatever time scale you want to use, from now into the future. Anything that you're really passionately excited about, can't wait for the world to see it. It can be on a personal level, it can be on a company level. You choose. Jorge, if you don't wouldn't mind going next again, or first one this time?
Yeah. Well, for me, this new branch that we are working in Spain, this is one of the things that excites me, and I want to see how this works. And the second one, we are working in a new business area that is consultancy. We have a lot of organizations that are asking us how we work, and we want to work like you, and we want your turnover. You know, 2 years ago, we created a new business unit where we help other organizations, other teams, other people to create a more self-organized environment and context. So we are working on that and to make that grow. So this is really exciting for me.
Fantastic. Thank you. Stella, how about you?
Yeah, I can think about at least two goals. One I currently have. I am in an account which is growing at 10 points. So at least what they want is to empowering the people on the team to basically, like the paths I was saying, you know, like going with the people and understanding the necessity they have, to help them to figure out what they want to do. So that's something I want to do. I am working on and doing with the current team I am. The other is I'm part of the diversity team at Tenpines, and I believe that we have a lot of challenges there, especially we are in an IT business and everything, and we have a big debt there we need to pay off. So I'm working more on new and better policies for diversity, to empowering people talking at our internal meetings, to help us having like a more balanced demographic team in terms of the company, and how do you do that, trying to align 83 folks in the same place with some topics which might sound a little bit polemic for the time. That is an interesting challenge I'm working on.
It seems that both of you will have your hands full over the next months with definitely exciting stuff. So it's the good type of being busy, rather than just being busy for the sake of being busy. All the more reasons I am entirely grateful for you being here with me today. I am really looking forward to seeing how everything works out for you in the coming months and years. And as I said, I'd love, once you're up and running in Europe, I'd love to do this again, catch up, because as I said, this is the topic that I believe should be front of mind for most organizations, and kind of as a way of working. And I'm very much committed to kind of promoting this. So continuing this topic, pulling at this thread, is absolutely forefront of my mind. So thank you very much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having us. And yeah, it was a pleasure, and we did it finally.
Finally, we did it. Yeah, it's only been a year in the pipeline, in the planning, but we did it. But you know what? If it's worth it, if it's meant to be, it will happen sooner rather than later, and it did. So fantastic. And again, it's been my pleasure. It's me again. Just one more thing before you take off. Head over to human.pm/we-got-this. That's all one word, where you can find this and previous episodes show notes, suggest a guest or topic, ask a question, or join a community of other listeners. Until next time.